It's time to meet the street with me, David Plimpton.
Testing. 1, 2, 3. Okay. Well, hello, friends. Once again, it's me, your host, David Plimpton, offering you the chance to catch up with me and some of the goings-on in and around my neighbourhood. Well, I thought I'd delve straight into it this week, so without further ado, let's find out what I've been up to this week in the section of the programme I call What I've Been Up To This Week.
What I've been up to this week.
3 days ago, I was subject to a barrage of abuse from one of my neighbours. That's right. It was Anne Dursley, from 3 doors down. Brute of a woman. Walks like King Kong. Owns the cake artistry stall in Brackley Covered Market. Anyway, Monday night, I came back indoors from my daily vehicle inspection to find this on my answer phone.
Hello, David. Mr. Plimpton. It's Anne. Anne Dursley at number 9. I don't like to do this over the phone, but it seems there's an issue with my cat. I think you know what I'm talking about, because over the last few weeks, I've noticed he's spending a lot of time in your company. It's ridiculous. This has to stop. If you want your own cat, get your own cat, but do not deny me access to my property. If this continues, I will not be afraid to seek legal advice, so take heed, Plimpton. This is your final warning. I'm not scared of you, and I will act accordingly.
Now, the fact of the matter is, that blasted cat is the last thing I want on my property, and I've done everything in my power to keep it away, including urinating over my own fence. The woman is clearly a liar, and if she won't accept my take on the situation, there's only one way to settle it. Trial by stone.
Trial by stone.
It's quite simple. The combatants meet at an arranged location, in this case the Brackley playing fields behind the tertiary college, with a large pile of stones. Somebody's there to adjudicate. I don't know who yet. Jill won't get involved. Says she can't stand for too long because of the knee issue. Anyway, the idea is each combatant stands 3 feet apart with a pile of stones next to them. On command of the adjudicator, said people will start to place stones in their mouths until they can fit no more in. The winner is the one who can fit the most stones in their mouth. You can't cheat. It's impossible. And that way, everything is settled fair and square. The ultimate decider. Trial by stone. And if it comes down to it, I assure you, I will see justice done through this ultimate physical challenge. Anyway, back to the programme. Talking of the ultimate physical experience, I've secured an absolute gem of a guest for this episode's interview. A local celebrity who, in fact, is known the length and breadth of the entire country. Because, quite simply, he's a record breaker. Today's guest is none other than Adrian Nutley, or, as he's more commonly known on the celebrity circuit, Mr. Fingers. And if you still don't know who he is, then there's a clue in the name, because Adrian Nutley is the proud holder of the title of the longest middle finger in the United Kingdom. In this interview, Adrian speaks openly about his long and colourful life hobnobbing with the stars, gives us an insight into his journey from freakish outsider to one of Britain's best-loved celebrities, and also reveals an incredibly erudite side to his character that may surprise his fans as he describes his passion for poetry. So sit back, relax, pour yourself a cup of tea, and without further ado, let's meet the street. Adrian Nutley, can you hear me? Adrian, are you there?
I can hear you. I'm here. Yes, hello.
Adrian, it's great to have you on the podcast. I'm very appreciative of you being here today and taking part in the show. Obviously, I know you and many people around the UK know about you. But for those people who haven't heard of you or maybe aren't familiar with why I'm speaking to you today, could you give us a brief outline of yourself and why you're unique amongst many of the people of the UK?
Yes, well, certainly. I am Adrian Nutley, and I have the longest middle finger in Great Britain. It's the middle finger of my right hand, and it's longer than anyone else in these fair isles.
I can only say it's an amazing feat of natural science, and it certainly does deserve that position as the longest finger in Great Britain. But could you, just for the sake of the listeners, describe the finger itself?
Certainly, yes. Well, a normal finger on a normal male hand, adult male hand, is roughly 8 to 9 centimetres. Mine is 15 centimetres, which is about 6 inches. And I was born with the finger that big. I believe I weighed 7.5 pounds at birth, and I think a third of my body weight was in the fully formed middle finger of my right hand. It emerged 15 centimetres long, which I was about 45 centimetres long from top to tail. So it was a third of my height at the time. It hasn't grown. It hasn't shrunk. It hasn't grown. It stayed that size throughout my life. And I'm in my late 40s now, and still it's the same size.
I know in some cultures, people born with misshapen limbs are often deemed as satanic, burned at birth or disposed of. But what do you think drove your parents to keep the finger? There must have been an option for you to have it removed. What made them want to keep such a terrible mutation?
Well, I know they had a blazing row in the maternity ward. My mother was all for setting fire to me and getting rid of me. My dad won by convincing her that it was funny. So it was kept on that basis. My mother left shortly afterwards. I'm still loosely in touch with her, but she wasn't part of my upbringing. My father raised me, and my middle finger was kept on his interception in family matters at the maternity ward. Otherwise, I'd have been a charred wreck.
Yeah. But these days, you're known around the country. You often make personal appearances. Your stage name is Mr. Fingers. You're known on the circuit. You're famous for this finger now. But before you actually were recognized as being this sort of wondrous man with an incredibly long finger, how was life in those days? Was it very difficult growing up different to the other boys?
It was hard, yes. I it's a bit like when you win the lottery. Are you gathering friends because they are into you as a person, or are they into your money? Some people only love me for my abnormally large finger. And I learned the hard way that I need to separate the wheat from the chaff when it came to interacting with genuine friends. I tried to hide it at times in my early youth, and it's impossible when you've got a massive appendage like that. You just can't hide it. No gloves fitted me. You try and tuck it under your arm and it pokes out the back. I couldn't hide it. And I mean, I don't know whether this was a decision fostered on the drama department at my junior school because I was there, or whether they would have done this anyway. But when I was 8, they staged E.T. the musical, and I was cast as E.T. just because I had the right finger. So I learned to embrace it. I learned to flaunt it. And that's when I found my niche. That's when I realized I like people looking at it. I have this gift. I should use it.
Yeah. And you know, up until I believe your sort of early 20s, you were living a relatively normal life. But is it true, according to my research on Wikipedia, which is obviously not the most reliable of places to get information, you were discovered by Norris McWhirter of the Guinness World Records book after he saw you working as a bin man? Is that an accurate description of how you were discovered?
It's not quite accurate in that Norris McWhirter was my bin man.
Right.
I didn't recognize him until my brother was in the house with me, and he told me that, you know, that's no ordinary bin man. That's Norris McWhirter of Guinness Book of Records fame. You should go out and talk to him. So I did, and he's a very strange, pedantic man. And although he recognized it was likely that I have the longest middle finger in Great Britain, he was reluctant to include it in his book because he said no records exist of fingers in relation to hand size. And
right.
Officially, the longest finger is held by the tallest man that ever lived, who I believe is someone called Robert Ludlow. No, sorry, I've got that wrong. Robert Wadlow. So he has the biggest finger ever. And I couldn't convince this pedantic man that there should be a record for middle finger size in relation to hand size. So my record, although no one disputes it, is not an official record. And we had a big falling out. We sort of rolled around in the rubbish on my drive for a bit, exchanging blows, and Norris McWhirter will not return my call. Well, he's dead now, so but even before he passed away, he would not return my call. So yes, it's a source of ire that I'm not in the Guinness Book of Records, and I should be, but we rise above it.
Well, if it's any consolation, I have heard rumours that Norris McWhirter was a bastard of a man anyway. So you know,
yes,
if that helps, then you know
it does. It helps me to sleep more easily. I did get some satisfaction from rubbing his face in some old yogurt that was on the drive.
And deservedly so. Adrian, it's definitely the longest finger in Great Britain. Are you actually familiar with who holds the world record? It'd be interesting to know if you've actually met them.
I have, yeah.
Right, okay. And one thing I'd like to know was were there any rivalry between the two of you?
Where to begin? So, again, it's not an official record for the reasons I've mentioned, but the longest finger in the world is currently on the hand of one Sebastian Huckleberry Johnson, who lives in Springfield in Connecticut, USA. I have met him on a number of occasions. We are regularly paired together on book tours and promotional tours. In his world, we are brothers, we are kin, he loves me to bits. I personally cannot stand the man. So it's an odd, I mean, there's no official rivalry because he thinks I'm great. I would sooner beat him to death with my finger than spend another moment with him.
Yeah.
He has some very, very strange views, really odd, unpleasant opinions. He when we first met, he took me into the forest out the back of where he lives, and he knows I'm interested in wildlife. He promised me that he'd show me lots of wildlife, and then he proceeded to shoot as much of it as he could. And I just thought that was appalling.
It's morally diminished, and as we know, Americans are very fond of guns.
He's got a rifle and a crossbow that's been specially adapted so he can fire it with his 17 centimeter middle finger on his right hand, and he's asking me to have a go and come on, shoot the face off this bear.
Yeah,
and he just doesn't appreciate that I'm not going to do that.
I'm slightly off track from the conversation, but it's interesting how people can become warped. But I had a friend who made a sword that was also a gun, and he tried to kill several animals on a farm in Norfolk on a camping holiday, and I ensured that he was arrested, and he's in prison
good.
Now. So
very
that's
good.
That's good. In the late 80s, right through to the early 90s, you were really the dish of the day, the flavor of the month, and you were on television up to three or four times a week.
Yes.
And one of, in my eyes, one of your most fantastic television appearances, which I would have loved to have been there to experience, was when you got to appear on TVAM, which was a breakfast television program, and you met Anne Diamond. Now, I think
yes.
You know where I'm going with this.
I certainly do, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, in those days, the guests were booked by the production assistant, and you didn't meet the presenters. In those days, it was Anne Diamond and Mike Morris. You didn't meet them until you were live on air. So, I mean, I assumed that they would have done their research. They knew who I was. They knew why I was on the show. But apparently that wasn't the case. And Anne Diamond, when I reached out to shake her hand, she freaked and thought that my finger was somehow independent of me and was going to attack her. She wasn't at all professional. She I mean, I'm going slightly off topic here. I don't know if you know this, but she was only ever photographed or filmed from the ankles up, because glamorous woman though she was an attractive lady. She wore very sensual clothes. She would always insist on wearing very heavy duty shoes, very sensible heavy shoes.
And work shoes, as you
work
might
shoes, yes, safety boots. And she took one of these off and just smashed at my finger with it, trying to kill it, I think.
And this was live on air.
It was live on air. Yeah. So I ran round to the back of the sofa and she followed me with her shoe, beating whatever part of me she could get hold of, thinking that I was set to end her somehow live on air. It would have been even more disastrous were it not for Mike Morris, who intervened and rugby tackled her to the ground. I flopped onto the sofa in a state of some shock. He gave her she knocked herself out in the scuffle, so he had to fireman carry her back round and deposited her on the sofa. But even then, as she came to, she still was holding her big policewoman's shoe, and she set about bashing away at me, such that he had to sit in between us. And I mean, by then the floor manager was having kittens, and I think they went to a commercial break and I was escorted off. So I never really got to talk about my finger, which was quite severely damaged. She's lucky I didn't sue.
I mean, obviously insurance must be, you know, the finger is the lifeblood of your career.
Absolutely, yes. It is insured to the value of £2 million, yes.
Wow, so that's an incredible amount of money.
That insurance money is well spent. Without that, I would be lost.
Obviously, the finger clearly defines who you are, and film work obviously is very big with you.
Yeah.
1992 saw you work on a rather famous film known now as Lawnmower Man. And
yes.
I believe you played a very integral role in this film. Well, if you'd like to tell us what happened, because if people were to watch the VHS now, they would hardly see you in the film at all.
No, it's true. I was naive, I guess, going into this. I auditioned for the part of Longfinger Man, and the script, as I read it, was called Longfinger Man. So it was basically the lead role. And it was the first time I'd ever tried acting, and I landed the lead part. Pierce Brosnan was in the film, and little did I know he'd also auditioned for Longfinger Man, even though his hands are normal proportions, he doesn't have any extra long fingers. But apparently, and I didn't realize until this was too late, he was desperately jealous of me when I first met him on set day one, and it was a long shoot. It was 2 months of intense work. He said to me, my finger is just as long as yours. Look. And it just wasn't. I didn't know how to react to that. But it emerged he had the ear of the director, Brett Leonard. Pierce was obsessed with lawnmowers for reasons I don't know why. And unbeknownst to me, they developed a whole other storyline, which they filmed without me, about chimpanzees and a disabled greenskeeper who had a lawnmower, which pleased Pierce Brosnan. So although I filmed what I thought was the lead role, when it came out, I'm only in one scene, 25 minutes in. Pierce Brosnan goes to a cafe, and through the window of the cafe, you can just see the top of my head. And that's the only surviving appearance. And I've not seen it on DVD. It's likely they've cut even that out, because I did get a modicum of repeat fees for the VHS sales for that appearance of my bald head. But they've dried up, so I can only imagine they've cut it out entirely.
Besides that, though, other films you have worked on other films.
I worked on Snakes on a Plane when it was called Massive Fingers on a Plane.
Brilliant film.
Yes, I think it would have been better if it stayed as Massive Fingers on a Plane. But looking back, I think it was a ruse. They got me crawling around the aisle with my big finger, and the extras would freak out, and then they just digitally removed me and replaced me with snakes. So they got genuine reactions. Under false pretenses, really, but hey, I still got paid. I still had a lot of fun. Samuel L. Jackson called me a big-fingered twat. That was his nickname for me, and he meant it affectionately, I'm sure.
And that's something you can treasure for the rest of your life, which is a wonderful thing to have as a life experience.
Yeah.
The finger itself hasn't been all fun and laughter all the way, which I hope you don't mind me addressing this. There was a terrible tragedy very early on in your career that nearly put an end to your work. Would you like to share that with us?
Yes, now? It's fine. I've taken a lot of time to come to terms with this, but I think I can talk about it. Yes, it was late 80s. And I was a guest on The Really Wild Show.
Yeah. Chris Packham, I believe, was one of the presenters. And Terry Nutkins.
I didn't meet Chris Packham when I was there. It was Terry Nutkins. And there's a live audience of children there. And the idea they had, it was a special edition featuring rare tropical birds of paradise. And the idea was that I would hold my finger out and the bird would see it as a branch and would land on it. And that was the plan. But unfortunately, the bird, whether he was distracted by the live audience or the lights or the camera technology, the bird came in far too fast and managed to impale its anus on the end of my finger.
Oh.
So obviously that was extremely uncomfortable for the bird. It was distressing for me. He'd impaled himself down to my knuckle, which on a 15-centimeter finger, that's quite a distance.
That's an incredible distance, yeah.
I'd like to say I dealt with it in a calm, professional manner, but the truth is I was new to television. I was just starting on my career. I panicked and I was flapping around with this tropical bird on my hand and I accidentally beat it to death against the studio walls. Terry Nutkins accused me of deliberately spearing it out of the air, which just wasn't true. And I've never forgiven him for giving those interviews afterwards, saying he saw me prod at it from my seat, trying to pierce its anus. And I just wasn't. I 100% guarantee I wasn't doing that.
And I remember in some of the tabloids, there were quotes from Terry Nutkins referring to you as a bird murderer, which I thought was quite cruel and quite wrong. Yeah. It was an accident and we should leave it at that. Although I would say, if I was you, I would have a lot of issues sleeping at night knowing that I had, even though it was accidentally, killed a bird in front of a studio full of school children who must have scarred quite considerably to see a full-grown man with an incredibly long middle finger with a bird speared on the end of it being beaten to death. It must have been terrible for those children, but hopefully they've grown up and they know now that it was only a terrible, terrible accident.
I hope so, yes. Yes, it's taken a lot of years of therapy for me to be able to repeat the story. It's a traumatic incident.
Outside of the world of show business and the world of the long finger itself, you're a keen writer and a poet. And I'd like to address this. Obviously, your book is coming out shortly. Adrian Nutley, A Lesson in Length, which is all about your life experience.
Yep.
When's it coming out? Will there be signings? Can the public finally meet the man behind the finger?
Yes, we're hoping it will come out next month. There will be signings. I generally don't do signings. It's quite hard for me to hold a pen. I'm right-handed. So what I tend to do is smother the finger in lots of ink and do a full fingerprint. I've lost count of how many shirts I've ruined just by forgetting I'm covered in ink, but it's just a thing I like to do at my signings.
Well, I assure you, Adrian, I will be at the front of that queue when it happens. Now, outside of the autobiography, you're also, and I don't know if I should bring this up because I know you've only spoken about this behind closed doors, but you're a keen poet.
Yes.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if you wanted me to.
No, I'm flattered you mentioned it. I'm very passionate.
Yeah, and the haiku is your speciality. And I believe you've written some based around your finger. This is obviously something I haven't planned in advance, but would it be possible for you to perform one of the haikus based around your finger for us as a special treat for the listeners?
I would gladly do that, yes. I'm very passionate about these poems.
Please, go ahead.
Okay. Well, the first one is called K9.
Mm-hmm.
Prepare yourself. It's quite powerful.
Okay.
Okay. Sploosh.
You said
okay just as I was starting, and it undermined the dramatic impact of that first word.
I'll count down from 3, 2, 1, and then Adrian Nutley, finger based haiku, 3, 2, 1.
I'm sorry, I thought you were going to say go after
right,
that.
Right, okay. Here we go. And Adrian Nutley, finger-based haiku on 3, 2, 1, go.
Sploosh! As a wet dog leaves the canal, muddy fur stuck to my finger. And I chose that one because I think poetry for me is, it's heightened language.
Yeah.
I could have begun it with a splash or a whoosh or a woof because there's a dog involved, but I chose to invent a word, sploosh.
Sploosh.
Don't try and look it up because it doesn't exist. I invented it, and that, I think, is language working over time.
Well, it's amazing because it's really something that the average fan of yours probably doesn't expect, such an enlightening journey into the art of language, which is, it's wonderful to hear you say these things here. It's from a man who speared a bird through the anus and killed it in front of a live television studio audience. It's such a wonderful sight to see to someone. It's fantastic.
Well, I have a poem about that incident, actually, as part of my recovery. If I can read that one, it's also a haiku.
Yeah, sure. It's great. Shall I count you in again, or how do you?
I think I can just go for this one. If you're
okay, okay. I'll shut up now. Here we go.
Tez Nutkins smelt bad. Even before I poked him, my finger found death. And originally that had a lot more expletives in it because I was so angry at how Tez Nutkins, which is poetic for Terry Nutkins, had treated me. But I took the expletives out on the advice of my publisher, even though these haikus are not published yet.
It's a very, very powerful piece of work, Adrian. And I'm honoured to have that involved in the podcast here. It's a wonderful, wonderful piece of work there.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Adrian. Adrian, I only wish I could show your finger to the listeners, but obviously if they want to find out more about you, you have a website, is that right?
I do, yes. Yes, you can check out on Adrian Nutley, Mr. Fingers. In fact, I think if you type in Mr. Fingers, you'll come up with the website.
Fantastic. Adrian Nutley, I'd like to thank you very much
for
taking part in this episode. And thank you, Adrian Nutley. Thank you very much.
I receive your thanks with immense gratitude. And I thank you for having me on the show. Thank you.
Thank you, Adrian Nutley.
Thank you for recognizing what I hope to bring to the world. Thank you for that. I thank you. I would, do you know what? I'd like to put a trampoline under your window and bounce up and down, and on every apex of every bounce, I would shout thank you directly into your window.
Well, that really is a very pleasant thing to say, and I'm quite taken aback because it's not often that people thank me for taking time out to perform on my podcast. But in exchange, if I was with you now, as you know, we're recording remotely, I would... Had I have known you were going to thank me in such a powerful way, I would have ordered some wool online and knitting needles and created an incredibly long finger glove for the one middle finger. And I would have knitted a glove for the one finger that had every color of the rainbow on and two eyes at the top, which you could wear every day as a reminder of my thanks towards you for taking part in this. So thank you, Adrian Nutley. Thank you.
That is such a warm-hearted gesture. I'm honestly fighting tears here, fighting very happy tears. That's a lovely thing because, of course, gloves, I can't get gloves to fit me. So that really is a beautiful gesture. In fact, so beautiful. What I'm going to do, if I have your permission, I'm a member of a Scratch Handles Messiah choir. It's mostly elderly ladies and gentlemen, but we do... The Hallelujah Chorus, we do it very well. If you will permit this, and if there's space in front of your house, I would like to come round and sing with my Scratch Choir the Hallelujah Chorus, but rather than Hallelujahs, it would just say David Plimpton as a way of thanking you. I mean, there's a couple of hundred of us, but I would like to do that if you'll permit it.
That, I must say, I wasn't expecting to be given such a wonderful Thank you there. But I certainly would accept that form of thanks. And I'd like to say that if you did come to my house with an entire choir, I would like to thank you by inviting all of you in. And was it over 100 people?
Yes.
Inviting all of them in into my living room, which could be a tight squeeze, but giving them all a blanket and a glass of red wine and a sofa to sit on, and showing them all an episode of Dad's Army after cooking every single one of you a Sunday lunch to say thank you. That's how much I would like to thank you for saying thank you to me, for saying thank you to you for taking part in this podcast.
Well, that is a wonderful thing to say. That is, I'm so deeply grateful for that offer that you can't see this because it's audio only, but I'm doing a dance. I'm doing a special little dance right now, and I'm confident it's going to be bigger than Gangnam Style. And I'm going to call this dance Thank You, David Plimpton. And it's going to be all over the world. People will be able to do the dance and know that it's because I wanted to thank you for thanking me.
Well, thank you, Adrian, for doing that dance. And let's hope it does become bigger than Gangnam Style. And I'd like to thank you for dedicating that and also choreographing that dance specifically for me. And I would like to say thank you. And I think as a way of saying thank you, if you were here now, I would give you my cash card and my credit cards, and I would let you take all of the money from my bank account and the deeds to my house and the keys to my car, and I'd let you have all of those things, and you could leave me on the street with nothing. I'd like to thank you.
Thank you. That really does go above and beyond what I was expecting. Thank you. I hope that goes some way to expressing how much I want to thank you.
Well, thank you, Adrian Nutley. It's been a pleasure. Thank you and good night. If you just say
good night.
I'll say good night, and then you. So thank you, Adrian Nutley, and good night.
Good night. I was very serious in that good night.
That's fine. I think that's fine. Okay. I think it shows the serious side of you as a human, Adrian. Good. So that's fine. So
very good.
Great work. Fantastic. If you've enjoyed this episode of Meet the Street, remember to like and subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcast provider. Follow me on Twitter at PlimptonDavid and join my Facebook page at Meet the Street One. And if you're really feeling generous, you can donate a small fee via ko-fi.com/meet-the-street. Every penny helps. Until next time, goodbye.
Jill, I've done it. You can use the spare room for the washing now.